I have been practicing employment and labor law and workplace law for over 20 years. First as a litigator for more than 15 years, representing both plaintiffs and defendants in claims of wrongful termination, sex, race, disability, harassment, sexual harassment, discrimination, retaliation, and other workplace claims. Now I work as a mediator, helping employers and employees resolve such claims through neutral options. Through my work, I have seen worst case scenarios and what happens when the relationship between employers and employees goes sour. Now that I am in a different place in my career, my life's mission and passion is to educate employers and employees and the general public on the best practices for creating great, progressive, and healthy work environments.
Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. If it's Friday, you know, it's the CEO series where we bring together the most exciting people to discuss their careers, not only their successes, but the detours, U-turns, and learning points. And today, our guest is Angela Reddick Wright. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Ron. It's such a pleasure to be here.
And it is 6 a.m. Is it California time?
Yes.
You have your coffee, right?
They say the early bird gets the worm, right?
I was always told that. I live by that. So, you know, as I told you early before we went online, I'm a fan of your work. I follow your work. I follow your postings and all those, you know, those career trajectories and how you have made all of these kind of changes. So I'd like for you to tell the audiences how you reached the pivotal point that you are in today. Walk us through that.
Oh, wow, Ron, that's a big question, but I'll try to give some quick highlights. Whenever I have a chance to tell my story, even my career path story, I always start with Birmingham, Alabama, because that's where my family is from. And that's where I had the opportunity to grow up until I was 9 years old. And I always start there because growing up in Birmingham, growing up in the South was really pivotal for me because it really sort of taught me, you know, everything about Southern hospitality. And my family comes from a neighborhood where everyone was there for each other, giving back to each other. But one of my earliest memories, my grandmother, Fleeta Gills, who's my maternal grandmother, was a home health care worker. And I remember as a child marching the picket lines with her as they were marching for better rights and wages and conditions for their work environment. And so that stuck with me as a child in terms of, you know, always, you know, growing up being someone who's active in the community, someone who believes in giving back, but also someone who, you know, stands up. And so that ultimately, I believe, even though at that time I didn't say, oh, I think I'm going to be a lawyer because of this, it put in me at an early stage in my life, this concept of, you know, giving back and, you know, helping to fight for others and helping to fight for justice. And so it's no surprise that many, many years later that I decided to become a lawyer.
Yeah. You mentioned Birmingham, Alabama, Marion, South Carolina, three traffic lights that I grew up in, and I live in Dubai.
Wow.
I live in Dubai in New York. So I understand how those things can play out.
Yes.
And talking about your grandmother, you know, in walking the picket lines, I always admire that level of, in our background, that people were active at that time when being active was not cool.
Right. Right. Or certainly you're putting your life at risk. I mean, because it was post civil rights Alabama, but not that long after, you know, the hard times of the 60s. But mm-hmm. certainly that sentiment lingered. And still, even when I go back now, you know, especially when I visit places like the Birmingham Civil Rights Museum or the Sixth Street Baptist Church, where, you know, three little girls were killed with a in a bombing, is definitely still very present there and reminds you of our duty and obligation now in this generation to continue to make a way for those that are coming behind us.
Yeah, I remember that Sunday morning, you know, at getting ready to go to church. And, you know, we heard that on the news. But you know what? That's another story that we could take forever ever to explore. So as you were going through that and you had that grounding, when did the legal piece come through? You know, undergrad, well, undergrad was California,
so we moved to California when I was 9. My mom and I, she was looking for a better place for us post-Civil Rights Alabama. So I grew up in Compton, California. And that's another story as well, growing up in Compton, which is a great place, actually, and not what you see on the TV. But that's the case with so many places that we hear about. And then I had a chance to go to high school on the west side of Los Angeles. And if you're from Los Angeles or know anything about it, the west side is sort of the well-to-do area of Los Angeles. So I'm going from Compton to the west side every day for high school. And that kind of opened my eyes to the types of schools and colleges out there, led to my going back east for college at Amherst College in Massachusetts, a place I'd never heard of growing up, but, you know, it's a top liberal arts school considered, you know, among what they call the Little Ivies. And that was an amazing experience because it allowed me to go to the East Coast, exposed me a whole nother world and culture. And it was there that my junior year in college, we had a program where you could meet alumni from the college and over the summertime, learn about their career paths, but very much what we're doing today. And with the idea that you might be, it might prompt some interest in you and in a certain career path. And so I happened to meet a guy named Sam Jackson, who was a lawyer, African-American lawyer here in Los Angeles. And he was an employment lawyer and spent some time interning and shadowing him over the summer. And so at the end of that summer, decided that I wanted to become a lawyer. And that's where it kind of been planted in me early in life because I was always an orator, always, you know, growing up in church, speaking and active and people like, you should be a lawyer. So I guess it was always in the back of my head, but having that opportunity to shadow and spend some time with an alum from my college, you know, made the difference and solidified in my mind that I wanted to go to law school. And I wasn't good at math or sciences. So I knew I couldn't be a doctor or engineer. So, you know, what do you do when you want a professional degree? You become a lawyer.
I gave a speech yesterday and I said, I know more lawyers that are not lawyering. And that was one of the contexts I made. You know, my thought coming up in college was to become an architect, but I wasn't good in math. So how can I become in math? But business was always there, again, because of family structure. My father was a small business person. So as you made that transition and you decided to go to law school, was this the area of law you were looking for? Or you just said, I'm going to become a lawyer in general and I'll figure it out?
Well, at the time I decided to go to law school, I didn't know what path I wanted to pursue. But when I got into law school, I love music. I love gospel music in particular. And I directed the gospel choir at my college, at Amherst College. So I actually thought I would become an entertainment lawyer and a music lawyer. And so while in law school at UC, I went to UCLA School of Law. While there, I was active in the entertainment society, did all things entertainment law, worked at an entertainment firm over the summers while in law school. So for all intents and purposes, I thought I would become an entertainment lawyer. But at the time I graduated from law school in the 90s, the job market was sort of soft for those coming out of law school. And over the years, it has its ebbs and flows. Some years, you know, it's very favorable to law school graduates. Other years, it's not as favorable. So I graduated at a time where it wasn't awful, but it wasn't, you know, pick your job and, you know, demand your price and you're hired, right? And so the first job offer, or one of the job offers I got was with an employment employment and labor law firm. And that by now I have student loan debt, you know, it's, I'm in my 20s. It's time to get started with life and establishing my own life. Yeah. So it's like, I just need a job. But fortunately for me, the first place I worked was an employment law firm with two amazing founding partners of the firm. And literally from day one of working there and seeing what employment law was all about, I fell in love with it and just never looked back. And so here I am 27 years later, and my path has been all about work and being an advocate, you know, for better, what I call healthy, thriving workplaces. I've been a, you know, litigator, workplace and Title IX investigator, and now a mediator. And so just my entire professional life and passion is now devoted to using the years of experience that I have to try to make a difference in the workplace. And that look, what that looks like every day is bringing employers and employees together to resolve problems and to resolve conflict. And I just love it.
And I know your grandmother said, I'm so proud of her.
Yes. And that's why I started the story there, because who knew, you know, being on the front lines of a labor strike that ultimately, you know, my work would align with that experience in my childhood.
That's one of the reasons we have the show, is because you never know how things are turning out. You know, people, they sell the dream for college. You come out and you have the degree and you spend 1 year there. It's, I can't do this. And I've heard that story so many times. So the nuggets that you say, you know, I see this and I'm going to try this. So yours was anchored in starting out. How would you advise a person that was probably thinking about law, did not understand all the intricacies of law and what area of law they would want to focus on? Like, yours was somewhat of an anchor because your story kind of led up to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of moving parts.
Yes, I would say, you know, if you're thinking about it and it's pre-law school, you know, try very much like I did, whether it's through your college or through your friends or network, you know, try to find people that can introduce you to other lawyers and literally, you know, just, you know, ask if they'll make an introduction, see if you can meet with that person, do kind of an informational interview with them and ask to shadow them for a day or half a day to see what they do. So you start to get exposure to the different types of areas of law. And then certainly once you're in law school, most law schools, you know, have career offices, and part of what they do, as well as their alumni offices, is they try to match, you know, current students with, you know, alumni or career opportunities so that you can get exposed. Like, so today, I'm starting today with this podcast, but later this morning, I'm going back to my school, my UCLA law school, and I'm speaking to a class about what I do as an employment mediator you know, the different styles of mediation. So, you know, certainly take advantage of opportunities when you have a chance to hear lawyers speak about what they do and, you know, just explore the different possibilities out there.
Yeah. I always like to see people talk about how they give back, because I'm going to say this word, success is not a straight path. And it's always these crooks and turns and learning from this, and you move to something else, and all these kinds of things go into play. But I'm always glad to hear when people say they're giving back. Jim Moy, who's an attorney, was on, and he was talking about, he went to Georgetown Law, I think it was, in D.C., and he was talking about how he goes back and he spends time with young students trying to figure out how this whole thing is going to play out. And, and for anyone that's listening, you have to follow her. She does amazing work across the globe. And I was just telling her my fan story, as I'm a big fan of hers, before we got started.
I will definitely look her up. She sounds like an amazing person.
Jim Moy is his name. He'll be probably logging in just a little bit.
Good.
Yeah, so this is what we try and do, because we all reach this point, but we have to reach back and pull people forward. So let's talk about challenges you've had. I'm sure there were days you said, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How do you deal with adversity in that early stage? You're probably at a point now that you could probably, you know, max it out. But how have you dealt with those challenges you faced and trying to get to the point you are today?
Well, it's interesting that you would say probably now you know how to navigate it and you're okay. But I would say even, you know, 20, almost 30 years out of law school and working as a professional, there's still days when you're like, how do I get through this day? How do I navigate the challenges? Because the more you do, the higher you go up in the full food chain, new challenges come, right? So mm-hmm. for me, my life is anchored in my faith. You know, I'm a Christian. And so I, you know, definitely, you know, begin my days with, you know, prayer and meditation and devotion to try to set my mindset. And that was even the case when I was in law school and college and, you know, just so many different chapters in my life where I've had challenges. I try as much as possible to stay connected to, you know, my close network of family and friends who also help keep me grounded. And, you know, now at this stage in my life, probably the biggest challenge is creating time, you know, for, you know, what we call balance, you know, all work and no play. Right. So I'm an admitted workaholic. I work a lot, as I'm sure many of us do. So trying to be much more intentional about carving out some time, just some days just to do nothing, just to have time to think, time to reflect. Even as the CEO and as a leader in the work that we do, we need time to step away, to think about the next, to think about making what we do better, to think about, you know, refining our strategies. And so if we're not as intentional about carving out time to refresh, to stay so that we can stay relevant, then, you know, we're kind of missing the point. Like, we have to be as committed to self-care, renewal, you know, rethinking, you know, our direction and strategizing as much as we are to doing the work is the probably one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in my time of working and being a leader.
Thank you for seconding that, because today was one of those days I had. That's, if I get through today, and I got a flight that leaves in about 5 hours to go to Canada. And it was one of those.
Go to Canada, you said?
I'd be in Toronto. Yeah, it was one of those weeks. And it was like, I was in Bahrain, I'm in Dubai, then I got to go to Canada. And I was like, but thank you for that. Because I know I'm not alone.
Right. So after all that travel, now sometime in the next few weeks, you're going to have to schedule some downtime physically to renew yourself, mentally to renew yourself, and to kind of take in, you know, I've been doing a lot of travel the last few weeks as well. And after I get back from, you know, speaking at my law school today, I have like set aside time the entire afternoon today just to look at what I've done the last 3 weeks with travel, who I met, who I want to stay in touch with. Because I'm like, all that's for naught if you don't really make something of it. So just finding times in your calendar where you're very intentional about making time for things that matter.
This may sound crazy. my reflection point is in an airport.
Oh, I love being in airports and on airplanes for that purpose.
I 3 hours ahead, and I go to the lounge and I just sit there and I think. Yes. So I get a chance to think about the week that was, what I'm facing, how am I going to deal with this one? And this is a problem here. But to me, that's calm.
Yes. And you can say to people that are trying to get in touch with you, I'm traveling today. Can I circle back with you? So you have a legitimate reason. Or you're like, oh, it's a lot of noise in the airport. Probably really annoying talking to me right now. So why don't we schedule something for next week?
I call a client.
So airports are great. I love it.
And not only that, but the plane, when you get on the plane, so Emrys, you can do internet. I said, I don't want to do internet. I just want to think.
Yep. I know that feeling.
So when we talk about how do we navigate, I think every person has to kind of figure out their own path, because one of the key things that you mentioned, that you are a workaholic. I'm kind of the same way. I basically work 7 days a week, but it's cool for my side. For my mm-hmm. side, it's not work. Mm-hmm. And as I told someone the other day, if I had to a job that they told me I had to do this 7 days a week, I probably would quit. So yes, talk to me about, you feel me, right? Talk to me about this, not an obsession, but you just enjoy what you do and it's not work.
That is so true. So I've been an employee for a good part of my career, for maybe probably the first 15 years or so, I was an employee somewhere. And I appreciate the being an employee and the training I got and the mentorship and so forth. But once I became an entrepreneur and kind of creating my own path, that in and of itself kind of creates, you know, while it creates freedom, it also creates a commitment to your work that is not like being an employee, because you're the one who has to make sure you deliver. And if you have other people working with you, whether it be contract or as employees, you have to make sure that you're delivering for them as well, keeping everyone motivated around the common mission and goal. So you're right. When you're doing it for yourself, it doesn't feel like work. And it just feels like you're just carrying out your commitment to build something that's great and to build something that's successful. And I'm the kind of person, I hate to feel behind, right? I hate for like something like emails to pile up or, you know, phone calls not to be returned. So I, even if I'm kind of working a little bit on the weekend, is so that when I start on Monday, you know, the day is the week and the day is set and I'm not behind the eight ball. So for me, I just do a little bit every day just to stay on top of things and to always make sure that we, that the company, that we're able to keep moving forward. So it doesn't, it's work. And, you know, some days, you know, for sure, Ron, we have days that are grueling and we're like, you know, and I am like, why don't I just go work for the government? You know, why don't I make my life easier, right? In fact, I have friends that I went to law school with who were approaching an age now where many people can do quote unquote like their first retirement. Like if they work for a government agency for 25 or 30 years, they're like, I'm going to be retiring in 2 or 3 years. Angela, what are you going to be doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm still going to be working, right? So there are days when I'm like, was it all worth it? But absolutely, to be able to chart your own destiny, to be able to bring others along with you, there is no more powerful feeling, or it's definitely among the top five, you know, best feelings you can have as a leader, to build something and to see it grow.
Yeah, it is that. It is that. And that's hard to explain lots of times to people that are not there. Yeah, but that's another session. So we got some good posts here. LinkedIn users says, find work that energizes you. You'll never feel like work. I think that's where we are. Sunny Slaughter is in the house.
Yes. Hi, Sunny.
Hey, Sunny. I'll see you in
our
D.C.
Our friend that introduced us. Thank you, Sunny.
Yes, so I'll see you excited. In D.C. soon. And then we have a LinkedIn user, a new way to take a moment and remind yourself of what you do and your purpose behind it. So thank you. Thank you, LinkedIn user. And my dear friend, John Self, who's a frequent listener, always here, big supporter of the show. Networking is so important now more than ever. Thank you. Thank you, John. I appreciate all that you do in connecting with us. So let's talk through the building of the firm. And then I know you're trying to transition that beyond just the building of the firm. What were challenges you face? I mean, so you work for a firm, everything's taken care of, and you just do work. And now you've got to come out, you're in charge. You're now the CEO, the rainmaker, whatever you want to call it. Different skill set.
Yes. So true. But the funny thing, Ron, so in the law business, it's all about clients and having clients and hopefully having clients that will use you again. And of course, doing great work for those clients so they will want to use you again. But I have a friend, she teases me because we were at our first law firm together many years ago. And she says, wow, Angela, there are two things I remember about you from that first firm. She says, one, you were the associate that came in and started to negotiate salary on behalf of everybody, like literally within your first year being there, right? So we got our salaries and I'm like, wait a minute, this is not, you know, commensurate with market rates and so forth. So I was sort of like the labor leader for our class of associates. So that's always been in me. And the second thing is, I've always been a your followers' point, I've always been a networker. It just kind of comes naturally for me. And I've always been into marketing. And so even as an associate, and that's sort of unheard of when you're an associate in the firm, especially a younger associate, you're just about doing the work. But I knew at an early stage that, you know, if I'm going to be in the law, I want to be a partner. I maybe want to have my own firm one day. So it was intuitive to me, even as a first year associate, to start building relationships. I already had a network from people I went to college with, people I went to high school with. So I was very intentional about, you know, making sure my friends and people I'd known over my years of work up to that point knew what I was doing and look for opportunities to do business with them. And so jump ahead 27 years later and having started my own firm 12 years ago, and now, you know, as a mediator, I have my own firm, but I'm an independent contractor with Signature Resolution, which is a mediation organization that helps promote us in terms of our work. But even as a mediator, I constantly have to be out building relationships, networking, letting people know that I'm here, I'm available to help mediate their cases. And so for me, that looks like having, you know, a strong marketing and promotions plan. Well, it starts with doing great work. My first boss said, if you want to be a great lawyer, the first thing you got to do is do great work. So never losing sight of that. It's about the work. But beyond that, you know, having a social media strategy, having a marketing strategy, writing articles, speaking on podcasts, all of that, you know, makes for a successful business and make sure that you stay relevant.
You were thinking this way back when? Because I tell people with MySpace, I came up in the human resources area and I said, always build a brand. So people look at you and say, well, I want you to come and give a speech and this is how much I'll pay you because I love what you're saying. Building the branding and what you were talking about, the marketing side of it, you know, understanding the business component, networking, that's just branding.
Yep.
That's the same as Tide or whatever it is. You have to build a brand that people want to engage with that.
Right, right. And Ron, we were building brands before it was called building a brand, at least building a professional brand or individual brand, right? So I'm glad it now has a title and a lot of people do quite well as consultants in helping folks build a brand. Yeah. And I'm just thankful that it was kind of innate in me. You know, I'm the first college graduate, you know, in my family, and I didn't grow up. I grew up with, you know, great, you know, working professionals, but I was the first kind of professional at this level where it's like, oh, you build a brand, you market, you promote all of that, your entrepreneurship. Yeah. So I'm just grateful that somehow was innate in me. And I didn't know what I was doing at the beginning and certainly have refined and grown, you know, in the 27 years that I've been practicing. But I'm glad that there was something innate at that time that says, you know what, you can't just rest on your laurels. You can't expect everybody to feed you business, that you're going to have to be active in building your business.
Yeah. So I'm sure you get these connections on LinkedIn. Someone reached out to me. We can grow your business by 1,000%. We can do this. I said, nah. I said, all my business is referrals. Some of them referred me. I don't do this kind of stuff. That's not
right.
Me.
Right.
Yeah.
Organic relationships. Yep.
That's what it's about. So from the firm, and you're now in Resolution, talk to us about that, because, you know, when I was reading through your bio and I saw some posts as you were talking about Signature Resolution, was that there when you were in law school, or was just something that kind of angled over and you were able, let me take this and run with it? How did that come about?
Yeah, so definitely not when I was in law school. What you learn once you get into some area like employment law is that there are kind of different paths you can take. Like most people, they'll start off as an employment litigator, as I did, where you're representing employers and employees are either in wrongful termination, harassment, discrimination type cases. And then from there, so you can stay on that path, be a litigator, become a partner in the firm, start your own firm representing clients. And or from there, you know, some will go, you know, become judges. They'll kind of set up their career path to get appointed to the bench or to run for the election to the bench. And some, and I actually externed for a judge while I was in law school, and it was a great experience. But I kind of was like, I think I'd be a great judge, but I didn't want to be a judge because I'm like sitting in one place all day, every day. And it just didn't seem like me. But another path in big in our world of employment law, particularly in a place like California where the courts are so backed up, is this concept of alternative dispute resolution, which started to grow here in California probably in this in the 80s, right? And it kind of created a cottage industry of lawyers and judges that when they came off the bench, who would become mediators in alternative dispute resolution professionals. And what, and so I kind of, as a litigator, I would represent clients in mediation. And I would ask myself the question, like, how do I become the person that's actually the mediator? And so I started to explore, do informational meetings, talk to mediators, find out what's the path to becoming a mediator. So I started that path officially about 12 years ago, started to transition out of litigation. And when I opened my company, it was to build a conflict resolution and mediation firm focused on employment law matters and workplace matters. And basically, you just kind of take, it's not something you can necessarily do, at least in my field, like from day one out of law school, to get hired as a mediator, to get paid as a mediator. You pretty much have to have been a successful lawyer or judge. And now you're offering your years of experience when an employer and employee are in conflict, whether it's during litigation or pre-litigation or just in everyday workplace matters, to say, hire me to come in and to help you resolve that conflict. And so in California, the way the mediation business works is we're usually part of a panel. Like you've probably heard of the American Arbitration Association. That's kind of one of the international panels that also provide arbitrators, JAMS. So Signature Resolution is a California-based company. We consider ourselves the best in the business. And there are about 100 of us that are hired on a day-to-day basis to help, in my instance, in employment matters, help resolve employment and Title IX matters. But there are other mediators that work on, you know, broader business issues, privacy issues, intellectual property, et cetera. But we're kind of the person that comes in, sitting in the middle of the table and saying, okay, what does it take to get this resolved?
Okay. Interesting career path, but you saw something there. You said, I don't want to be the judge, but I enjoy what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden this resolution is coming up. So signals, we look for signals, or we should look for signals and say, maybe there's a slight detour here and maybe I explore something else. Is that kind of how that worked?
Yes, it is. And I knew, I mean, litigation is quite combative, right? I was good at it. I enjoyed it, but it, quite frankly, it takes a lot of years off of your life, right? So I knew I didn't want to spend 30 plus years
in
battle, right? You know, every day is a battle. You're fighting with opposing counsel. You're going hard to represent your clients. You know, there's something to be said for that. And of course, those people are my clients now. So I definitely appreciate and value the work that they do on behalf of their clients every day. But, you know, my personality has always been geared towards resolution. And even as a litigator, I would call opposing counsel. I'm like, so, okay, what can we do to get this case resolved sooner than later? So I knew there was something in me that, you know, really, you know, enjoys and values kind of working on solutions to problems as opposed to kind of fighting, you know, against a problem. So when I discovered mediation as a career path and the fact that there's this whole industry that supports people that do the work that I do, I was like, wow, this was created just for me.
That's So let's talk about your leadership style. You know, I do a lot of work in leadership development, and, you know, we bring things from, you talked about your grandmother and what you learned from her, walking the lot, picket lines with her, foundational moments. How would you describe yourself as a leader?
So I'm a big believer in servant leadership first. I had a chance to be and look it up, but later it's called the Coral Fellowship, and it's a leadership program. And I was a Coral Fellow many years ago, and it trained us in this concept of servant leadership, where you lead by giving, you lead by example, you lead by rolling your sleeves up, and, you know, rather than telling your team, this is what we're going to do, you're like, we're doing this together, and you're the first on the front lines to do it and to show a commitment to it. So that really shapes who I am through and through. Servant leadership, leading by example, and not asking others to do anything that I would not be willing to do, that I don't do myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you, because you built two firms. I mean, you built the law firm as well as the signature resolution. And you just carry
that on. Signature Resolution is its own company. I'm not the owner of Signature. I'm one of the mediators that's part of the panel there. But we're independent contractors. So my firm is a contractor to Signature Resolution.
I see. So you talk about giving back. You know, one of my mantras always is that when I walk out of my house every day, how can I help somebody? And mm-hmm. It's interesting. Pre-COVID, I was checking in at the airline, and a young lady was leaving. She had been living here for X amount of years, and she was going back home, had extra luggage, and the guy was trying to make her pay. She didn't have the money to pay, and she was in tears, and he was so rude. Mm. And I fly the airlines a lot, so I knew the guy, and I said, you know what? Mm. And I stepped in, and I said, I will pay her fee. I said, why are you so rude? So anyway, I took care of that. I got a note from her this week, and she said, you have no idea what that meant for me. And I was thinking about you. And I said, you know what? I can fly forever. I can fly to my next stop. Just yes. Living off those kinds of things. So it ties into servant leadership. You know, you always try and look for ways to give back to people.
Indeed. Now that I love that story, Ron. And it's interesting you would say that because you know, this is a whole different subject. I feel like customer service, I don't know what it's like in Dubai or around the world. I know you're around the world, but I know in the US, customer service since COVID has been really challenging. And so, and I would, like, you know,
the, I like the way you said that in kind of a nice way.
Right. And I'm one that could, like all of us, can get irritated with a bad customer service call or what have you. But I'm trying to be a lot more intentional, just like, you know what, you don't know what people are going through, what's happening in their lives. So I'm trying, I mean, to your point about kind of leading even in the small things, you know, being much more intentional about when you call the 800 number, like, hey, how you doing? Like, how's your day going, right? Especially if I sense a little angst in their voice, or at the checkout stand in the grocery store or Target or what have you. You know, when you walk up, it's like, here's my stuff, bring me out. I'm like, so how are you today? So I love that. And it just makes, you know, at some point in life, you just realize, I know it sounds cliche, life is short. We only have so much time here. You could spend it being miserable and engaging with people in a miserable way, or you can spend it kind of leading and, you know, being the light in that room. You know, I'm very much, that's sort of like my mantra now. Like when you show up in a room or a store or just, what, you know, running errands, try to be the light in that place. And it takes you kind of coming out of yourself on some days, because some days you're like, I'm in a mood too. So let's both be in a mood, right? So, but I think if you can lead from that place of positivity, one, it just makes you feel better about yourself and about life and what you're giving back to it. But you also, you, like that woman, you make their day and they remember you. And that's, you know, one life that you've touched. And through that, she's touching other lives. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's a wonderful thing.
And that was 4 years ago.
And wow.
That was this, 4 years ago, and she sent me that note, and she said, "I just want to check in to see how you're doing. You have no idea how much I appreciate that." And I'm like, "Okay, next flight, I can fly myself. I don't need
that
a plane."
That is so awesome, Ron. I love that.
You know, in doing that. So I want to begin the process of closing out the show, and I appreciate you for you know, making the time to do this. What advice would you give young lawyers? I'm going to come back to that, because young lawyers are trying to, they may go to law school because their father was a lawyer or their mother was a lawyer, whatever it is. And they realize this is not it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And, you know, because when I mentioned in my speech, I said, I know more lawyers that are not lawyering today. I know more accountants that are not accountants today. Career advice from high school to explore or follow what everyone else in the family is doing and you go do one thing. I'm always intrigued by that.
Right, right. Thank you, Sonny. I'm glad you're committed to being the light too. But one piece of advice I always give to young lawyers, or even lawyers that are midstream and trying to figure it out, is to go back to that moment when you decided you wanted to go to law school, when you decided you wanted to be a lawyer. Most of us who make that decision, even if we have family members that are lawyers or know people who are lawyers, most of us make that decision because there's something in us that says, I want to make a difference. And, you know, it could be a difference in civil rights, employment law, business law, even, you know, and you're like, I have this sense of wanting to bring about justice in some area of law and to be a champion for something. And what happens in law school is you kind of get caught up in the frenzy of law school is busy, is challenging. You have student loans. And so your psyche starts to turn to, I just need a job. I just need a job. And so you sort of take whatever job is available. And that's fine and dandy because we have to do what we have to do. But then before you know it, you're on, and this is probably not just in the law, you're on this treadmill and you're going and it's on like, you know, 20 speed and it's going, taking you in this direction that you never intended to go. And then you look up and you're like, I'm unhappy. Why am I a lawyer? Why am I doing this? And so it's at that moment, Ron, where no matter what career you're in, where you need to stop, you need to pause, you need to go back to that moment when you made the decision to pursue that career path and ask yourself, am I now doing what I'd set out to do? And if I'm not, how do I pivot? How do I make a change that gets me back to doing, you know, what originally motivated me to want to pursue this career path, whether it's lawyer, accountant, doctor, you know, I think many professionals, you know, face that. And if there's any example from my life and probably your life, Ron, as well, is you cannot be afraid to pivot. You cannot be afraid. If you see yourself going down a path that is just not the right path for you, and no matter how old you are, how many years you've been doing what you've been doing, don't be afraid to pivot. I think I've done probably 3 or 4 acts in my career. And people are like, how did you do that? And, you know, you just got to make the decision, make the commitment to make the change, getting the necessary, you know, training, education, whatever you need to do to make that pivot. And it can be daunting. You can be very comfortable and like, I'm so comfortable. Why would I pivot now? Right. But it's about your mental and emotional health or continuing down a path that you're really not happy with.
Yeah, you took me for a loop with that. I owned a convenience store at one time. I owned an eyeglass reseller. I'd buy up frames that were out of style and go on the street, knock on doors, and say,
"Wow,
so many pivots."
You're a serial entrepreneur. I love it.
When you talked about your grandmother, my father owned a taxi company in a little town called Marion, South Carolina. Very successful. And I enjoyed driving the car and taxiing on the weekend because people were hanging out. you know, you make money. He said, you can keep the money. And it was a different kind. So I always knew I would be doing something for myself versus mm-hmm. a job. But, you know, you have to go through the job thing. But you talked about being afraid. And I think lots of people are afraid because they look at their obligation. They look at things and they choose a safe route, but it's a miserable route. And you just keep going through that. Lives are miserable. Everything comes about as a result.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And of course, you know, there are practical considerations, especially if you are a family person, you have mortgage and all that. So, you know, you have to be thoughtful about that. But if there's a way to kind of take a step back and see if there's a way to pivot and still maintain your obligations, then, you know, we only get one chance at this, right? And you got to make it the best you can while you can.
Okay. Angela, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. It was really, really, but I knew it would be because I've been following you. As I said, I'm a fanboy, so it's everything is cool. So one of the goals of the show is to bring people like yourself on to talk about careers and the journey of getting to where you are, because sometimes people coming out of school, they think it's a straight shot, and it never, ever is. So you brought it all out today, and I thank you for being a guest on the show. Are there any takeaways before we close out for today?
Be the light. Be the light in the work you do. Lead by example. Lead by doing. And just realize, you know, we've all around the world, and even now, Ron, as we speak today, you know, if we allow it to, what's happening in the world will completely depress us and make us feel that things are hopeless, you know, honestly. But don't give up hope. Be the change you want to see. And, you know, speak life into the lives of others that you come into contact with, whether it be your colleagues, your employees, or just the clerk at the store. You know, we can lead by example in every area of our lives.
Yeah. Good sermon. Since you said you were church folk. This was cool.
Yeah.
Sunny Slaughter, what an extraordinary show. Thank you both. Sunny, I'll see you in a few weeks. I'm going to come down to D.C. You and Jim and I hang out. So thank you for being a guest.
Hold on. Hey, I didn't get an invite.
Fly in.
Okay, okay. I'll call you and ask about it.
Okay, cool. We're going to close that now. So, but just hang on for a second.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ron. This is a great show. Thanks for all you're doing to have so many excellent voices out here.
Thank you.